Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Okay, I'm calling all ladies here. Ladies, do you have relationship issues? Ladies, have you ever, like, hooked up with a guy and then all of a sudden you don't hear from him anymore, or he dates you sporadically, or he tells you he can date you on Tuesday from 4 to 6? This is the show for you. Help you break that pattern and find the love of your life. Dr. Marnie Feuerman is with us, and she's going to talk about her brand new book, Ghosted and Breadcrumbed. Stop falling for unavailable men and get smart about healthy relationships. So this is going to be a very interesting show. This is a fun lady, and we're going to, you know, really help ladies get yourself straight. And gentlemen, this is a show for you to listen to so that you do not have the pattern that we're talking about, okay? Be available. It's a wonderful thing. So sit back, relax, and we'll just jump right into this. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. The real question is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. Say that 3 times real fast. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, The Men and Money Book, and Masterful Choices, The Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information, to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. Marriage and family therapist Dr. Marnie Feuerman has released a brand new book to help women who find themselves in a never-ending loop of sporadic texting, mixed messages, and other poor treatment by men that they are dating, or at least they think they're dating these guys. The book is entitled Ghosted and Breadcrumbed, Stop Falling for Unavailable Men and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships. And this is exactly what is needed right now in the world today for women to take back their power and asking for what they want in their relationships and intimate connections. Now, Dr. Marnie Feuerman is a licensed social worker and marriage and family therapist with a private practice counseling those with relationship issues. She also trains therapists to do couples therapy and writes about love relationships for a number of online media. Now, she lives in Boca Raton, Florida, and you can check her out at the website, thetalkingsolution.com, or she has another website, and that is, I guess she'll have to tell us because I don't have it right in front of me. Welcome, Dr. Marnie.
Thank you. Thank you, Monique. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to
have
you.
Yeah, the other site is... Thank you. It's Dr. Marnie online. So we can talk about that later, too.
I had it and then it went away. So thank you so much for writing this book, Ghosted and Breadcrumbed. I was reading the sheet about it, I was like, oh, okay, so what's a ghost and what's a breadcrumb? And then after I read more of the sheet that was presented to me, I'm like, yes, so many women that, call psychics. Okay, they need this information. Not that you're not, valuable, because you are, but, at least the psychic can help them get clear, and then they can go to you to finish up their clarity. So why did you feel the great need to write this particular book?
I was seeing a lot of these women in my practice, number one, and then another piece of it was the online writing that I was doing. So I have a lot of articles also on different media outlets, and some of the more popular blogs, so the ones that got the most views and shares, were also related to that content. So these were women who were really struggling in their dating and relationships, or they would find themselves in just, what I would even call emotionally abusive relationships. And then another article that got a lot of attention was one in particular about walking away from an affair. So these are for women who are affair partners and they feel really stuck, or they're just waiting and waiting and waiting. They're thinking this relationship is meant to be and it's going to pan out. And then they find themselves just really struggling between maybe the promises that they're hearing of a future from a man, and then they're seeing just time going by and life is passing them by. Their wishes of maybe starting a family are gone, and so they're really starting to get worried and struggle, but they also feel love for this person. So all of this, I looked at data. This is all good information that told me that there's people out there that really need this information. And so I figured it would be great to put it all in a book. It's easy to get a book. Books are not that expensive. And I thought it was a great way to get the word out there and have them also read about solutions and what to do about it. So not just what the problem is, but then what do they do from there? How do they help themselves?
Okay. And ladies, this book is just over 200 pages. It's very easy read. It's almost like reading a wonderful novel, okay? But the byproduct is that you're going to receive so much information, not only to help yourselves in a relationship with a man, but also to help yourself, because when I was reading it, it caused me to take a look at myself. Okay, and I feel that that will do it for you too. Now, Dr. Marnie, you say that 90% in your book, you say that 90% of cheating married men do not leave their wife, no matter how much they're promising or whatever. Or you say if they leave their wife, they marry someone else. What is that about? I mean, you wait around, you know, 5-6 years for the kids to get out of high school or even graduate college and all of this, and then all of a sudden he leaves her. But then he's got this 22-year-old.
Oh, boy, yes. I think it's very, very rare for those relationships to work out. And I know there's exceptions to the rule. But for the most part, the odds are so bad that I just wouldn't recommend women wait and wait and wait for this person to leave their spouse or the kids finally go off to school or whatever the case is, whether it is that they really are using you, let's say, as a transitional person, or he's been using you because it helps him tolerate his marriage if he really is in a bad marriage or he really is unhappy. And then the other piece is that when you're together with someone day-to-day in a regular relationship, sometimes you realize, you know, we're not right for each other or we're not compatible. And so all these things just make the statistic worse and worse and worse that it will actually work out. So I would really caution women, if they're in this situation, to really think about this, because sometimes they're waiting and waiting and waiting, and they know their day is going to come and they're going to be with this person maybe forever, and so they're going to wait it out. But the odds are really, really poor of it actually working out for several reasons that I do go over in the book.
Okay, so what happens when a woman is waiting and the guy says, okay, I'm going to leave in January. January comes and goes, and he doesn't leave or even brings it up. And then they have another fight, and he goes, okay, I'm going to leave in September. September comes and goes. So it's 3 or 4 years down the road. How does a woman stay in that relationship? I mean, you know, the guy's lied to her several times. He's obviously cheating on his wife. So it kind of brings in the question of integrity. So what's a woman to do?
What I would say is if it's going to happen, if you're going to get the opportunity to see if this relationship's going to pan out with this man, mm-hmm. usually they will be, the divorce will be pending, or they do leave really quickly. It's they're really at the tail end of that marriage, and they've taken actionable steps to get out. Those maybe have some potential at that point. But if it's the situation you just described where, you know, this month rolls around and the next one, and then there's a new promise of and a new date, and it's further, and the goalpost just keeps moving, I would say with that, again, your odds of it really working out or really happening just get worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a way for the man to, you know, have his cake and eat it too, so to speak. So it's easy for him to do and to make these promises and a lot of times manipulate. And you have to remember, you're having a relationship with somebody who is cheating, and they're having this secret affair with you, and there's a lot of intensity around the secretness of it. A lot mm-hmm. of times there's a lot of passion, there's a lot of chemistry, and mm-hmm. so people think in their mind, this has to be my soulmate. And it's a very impractical way to think about it, because you really don't know, because you don't see them every day. You're not picking their dirty socks up off the floor, you know, mm-hmm. for the 10th time, or you're not getting day-to-day information about them, and you're mm-hmm. also not let into all aspects of their world that really tell you who that person is. You're not meeting their friends. You're definitely not meeting their family. Mm-hmm. So I just think all over, it's just a very, very tough situation. And I would say if the time goes on and on and on, I think it's important to make a definitive decision about what you want out of your life and what goals you have. And if mm-hmm. this person isn't aligned with your goals and your values, then you have to do what it takes to move forward. And I think a lot of times people go back to, let's say, a bad relationship or even an affair type relationship mm-hmm. because they have a lot of difficulty tolerating all those emotions that come with a breakup. You know, it is, you are hurting. It is lonely. It is really hard. If people can endure and tolerate that phase post breakup, mm-hmm. they'll be through to the other side. And they will be open to finding somebody who is available for them. And they also deserve that. I think some women are stuck just because maybe they think they don't deserve somebody who's really available to them. And so they're going to want to make sure that they understand what might have got them in that relationship to begin with, why they mm-hmm. accepted that or put up mm-hmm. with that. Mm-hmm. And another interesting factor that I found out as I was doing some research for the book is that a lot of times women will meet the man and not know they're married. Mm-hmm. So the man will, you know, hide the ring and be mm-hmm. all charming and wonderful, and then it's maybe a couple weeks later, a couple months later that the woman realizes he is married. And some of those women just say, "Oh my God, I feel deceived. This is horrible." And they just leave, and that's that. But mm-hmm. some women feel like they are in love already. And so that also keeps them stuck. So they were deceived in the beginning, but their feelings become so strong. But even so, it's still, you know, I want them to define it correctly, you know, that it may not be love at that point. It's chemistry, uh-huh. it's intensity, it's romantic, it's all those things. But be careful about labeling it love, because then it's also going to keep you stuck and just okay. waiting and waiting and waiting for this to pan out. And okay. it may never.
Okay, so I want to take this scenario one step deeper. Say that, you know, the woman has connected with a man. She's December. She's older. He's May. He's younger. She's got money. He's basically dirt poor. He's married. He says he doesn't sleep with his wife. She just doesn't turn him on. But at the same time, the wife wants a baby. Is that a red flag?
Yeah, I would say that. I would definitely say that it's a red flag. I mean, you're going to also hear, if you're with a married man, you're going to hear a lot of lies and a lot of things that he might say to keep things going. And as women, because I think we can be very compassionate, And we can be very intuitive and we feel things deeply. And so sometimes we start feeling really bad and we take pity on this man who's, let's say, complaining about his wife and how awful it is, or, you know, whatever he's going on about, to convince you that his situation is bad and he's stuck, mm-hmm. and that you are so special to him and that he needs you, because otherwise he would be in purgatory. And so women can get really sucked into that as well. But I would say, remember that the foundation of the relationship is faulty. And so it's really hard to build a successful, healthy relationship on a faulty foundation.
Yes, it is. Well, folks, we're speaking with Dr. Marnie Foreman. She is the author of Ghosted and Breadcrumbed, Stop Falling for Unavailable Men and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships. And you can check her out on her website, and that is thetalkingsolution.com or drmarnieonline.com. Okay, so Dr. Marnie, what are the healthy building blocks of a wonderful, healthy relationship?
That's a great question. I mean, number one, which is the opposite of the book's title, is someone who is available. They're physically available, but most importantly, they're emotionally available, which means that they're engaged with you. They're able to talk to you from a deeper place. They show up for you. They have your back. They're there for you. You can reach them when you call. All of that, I would say, is the foundation of a healthy relationship. So if there's really back and forth responsiveness between two people, and two people feel like they can rely on each other, count on each other, share, and it's safe to share, mm-hmm. I would say that would be that's the foundation that we're really looking for. And certainly if somebody ghosts you, flakes on you, throws the breadcrumbs, or just isn't consistent in their behavior, so they might say something but they don't do it, you know, the actions and words don't line up, and I would say listen to the actions, much more important. That's going to tell you that you have a keeper, that you have somebody that you could have a future with. Mm-hmm. And then certainly your core values, if you think about what's important for you, and, you know, what are non-negotiables, you know, what things you absolutely would not accept and the things you want. Mm-hmm. If you really think clearly about it, and if someone doesn't match up to that you should move on, and it's okay to do that. You don't have to just be with somebody because they like you more than you like them, or for whatever other reason. There's plenty of options out there, and you don't want to get stuck spending too much time with the wrong person, because then you're not going to be open to meeting the right person.
But Dr. Marnie, what happens if you just have like this wonderful, fantastic sex, and he's just there for sex whenever you want it, and, you know, it's just wonderful. You got to have it.
Well, I think as long as two people have an understanding, you know, mm-hmm. that's what's most important. So if you're somebody looking for a commitment and you're wanting something, or long-term, or marriage, whatever it is, or kids, it doesn't matter. What I tell people is what you want has to align with what your partner wants, or what mm-hmm. the person you're with wants. So if you both just want sex, it's not an issue. But if you want more, and you want someone who will be your partner thick and thin throughout your life, you're going to have to really openly communicate about that. And I know that's a risk, you know, because you're sharing, hey, I want more than just sex or something like that. Mm-hmm. You've got to make sure that the other person is on the same page as you, because it won't happen if you're not in alignment in terms of your future relationship goals. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would advise people to do.
Okay. So if he has this wonderful silver tongue and he just talks to you and says all the right things because he's a master at knowing what you need to hear, how do you break the pattern?
Well, I think it starts with you doing some self-assessment and really looking inward and figuring out, are there things that are blocking you from getting what you want? Are there patterns you keep repeating that are holding you back? Sometimes it's, there's just something that feels comfortable or familiar, even if on an intellectual level we realize it's not healthy. For instance, if you're drawn to this charming, you know, this super charming, very handsome type of guy or individual, and yet they are, you know, they drink too much, they smoke too much, they can't keep a job, whatever else. They're not maybe the type of person that you can see yourself with in the future, or you know they're not going to be dependable and reliable. You got to ask yourself, what is this something that maybe is being repeated? Maybe this dynamic played out in my childhood. Maybe I saw my mom with somebody like this, or maybe my father's like this. So I think you've got to do some self-reflection and sometimes make what isn't conscious more conscious so you have better self-awareness. And so you realize that maybe I'm behaving this way or getting stuck in these same relationship patterns because it's familiar, but if it's not healthy, I've got to figure out what the unhealthy part is so that I can now change it and make some differences and not keep doing it over and over and over again, but make some tough, sometimes hard changes because they're not comfortable, right? They push us out of our comfort zone to say, okay, I'm going to break up with this person, or I'm not dating anyone like this anymore or like that, or I realize that there's this type and this is the third time I've been with the same type. You know, I'm not going to do that anymore and I'm going to really do the work. And sometimes it may mean seeing a therapist, a psychic, both, whatever you need to do, a multifaceted plan, I would say, for getting yourself out of these habits.
Okay. So let's go back and let's do a couple of definitions. First of all, what is ghosted? What's a breadcrumb? Because I think maybe some women may be going through this and not understand the terminology that we're using.
Sure. The terminology is something that I would say has come out within the last maybe decade. I think it started with the word ghosted, and it was a way that popular culture, where they were describing these dating experiences, so they were giving them these kind of quirky names, and you know, certainly stuff that's appropriate for Urban Dictionary. And ghosted is when someone a potential romantic interest just drops off the face of the earth, and you don't know what's happened. Maybe you've had a date, and it, in your mind it went really well, but then you don't hear from them anymore, or you try reaching out and texting, let's say, but you get no response. For some people, it's actually happened in relationships where they might have had a 2-3 month, 4 month relationship with somebody, and then poof, they disappear. So being ghosted is also, now I'm hearing it in other settings. For example, like the workplace, saying something like, you know, we scheduled an interview and the applicant ghosted the interview. He never showed up, something like that. So I'm hearing it spread into other areas. Breadcrumbs, being given breadcrumbs is like when you're strung along. So somebody might be giving you little bits to keep you going. You know, they kind of throw you a bone once in a while. You don't hear from them for a week, but then they call you and they tell you how much they miss you and want to go out on a date, and you see them, and then you may not hear from them for like 3 or 4 days or so. And so you're given just little bits, but you're never given, you don't really have a full-blown relationship with that person. And there's a few other terms that are just, you know, kind of quirky to describe these kinds of dating experiences, and I'm hearing about more and more every day. Mm-hmm. I think millennials use them a lot, and I think they're used a lot more with the online dating or the apps. Mm-hmm. So people seem to use them a lot when it comes to the online dating.
Well, you know, talking about online dating, and I didn't mean to go there next, but I'm going. how can you have a certain level of surety with online? I mean, when you meet someone face-to-face, you can get a feeling if you're willing to pay attention. You can see red flags if there's any pretty much immediately, again, if you're willing to pay attention and acknowledge. But online, I mean, you know, it could be anybody, anything. So how do you successfully date online?
Yes. What I don't want people to waste too much time texting back and forth. Mm-hmm. I think you should make a point to meet the person in a very casual atmosphere. This could just be coffee, you know. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You really don't know, and people have fooled people a lot in many different ways. You know, the person doesn't look the way they look online, or they're not the right age, or they lied about things. And so that does happen. So I would say, have the right attitude. So if you can get it together and the person's interested in actually meeting you, well, that's a good first step. And then I would say have the mindset that you're meeting a nice human being, hopefully a human that's nice, not like a potential romantic partner, so to speak, because I think we have so much of our expectations then that get tied up in that first meeting that don't have to be. And so if you just look at it like, okay, I'm meeting somebody who's hopefully decent and nice, and if it pans out, wonderful. If it doesn't, okay, on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what online dating is helpful for, because you're going to meet so many more people than you would normally meet if you just stick to friends setting you up or your workplace or wherever. It just opens up a world of possibility. And so it's a double-edged sword. It's really good that the numbers of potential partners you're going to meet are become much higher. But at the same time, yes, that it's a little bit riskier, and you have more of a chance of a bad outcome and being manipulated and all of that stuff. But I would say there's ways to do it that are better. And I think you just have to be careful how you're approaching the whole process and have a good attitude, have a very good and open attitude towards it.
Okay. So in your book, you talk a lot about attachment. What is the difference? Or what is, first of all, what is attachment, and are there various kinds, and why is attachment so important in romantic relationships?
That's a great question. Attachment is really, really important, and I think it helps us determine those patterns that we referred to a little while ago. It will help you figure out how attachment might be influencing your choices. And attachment theory is a very popular theory in psychology. It's not just, I don't just want to say it's popular. It's pretty well proven over and over again that it's a very, very real and practical way of understanding human behavior. And attachment is about the deep and enduring emotional bonds that connect us. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily reciprocal. Just like if you look at a child hugging like a lovey or something, that's actually that's a bond as well, and that's attachment too. Mm-hmm. But we typically have our first bond as an infant, usually to a caregiver, typically a parent or mom. Mm-hmm. And we know that the quality of that bond can really vary depending on how responsive that caregiver is to us, how responsive they are to our needs. So as a baby, if we're crying out, does somebody come right there and find out what's wrong and help us? Mm-hmm. And we know that that can really vary between being really bad and absent and even possibly abusive to the other end of the continuum being very consistent, very responsive, very loving, and all things in between. And so we develop these patterns around that are like predictable patterns of ways of the ways that we do attach to people, mm-hmm. and also how we think about ourselves, the world, others, how we responsive we think other people are going to be. And so it's important to learn about attachment because it gets reactivated in our adult romantic relationships. So if an example with somebody who is more avoidant, okay, so they turn down their needs because perhaps they were in a family where the parents were very unreliable, mm-hmm. and the caring was inconsistent. And so this person would tell themselves, why cry? You know, why ask for help? I'm just going to sit here, play by myself and stay very self-contained and not reach out for others because nobody comes anyway. And so they learn to just really contain their needs. And so later on, they tend to do that throughout their lives because they don't have a template for reaching for others, for mm-hmm. healthy dependency, or that it's okay to have needs. It's okay to be vulnerable and share it with a partner. So these early attachment behaviors get carried on throughout our lives. And so you're either secure. So if mm-hmm. you had good experiences, and you can look back on your childhood and said things were pretty good. I always had somebody I could go to if I needed help. And mom was usually there. Dad was often there. I have good memories. So if you think back and things generally felt really good to you, you're probably securely attached. If not, if things weren't all, didn't really go too well, mm-hmm. or in a case where, let's say, there was abuse or severe abuse or neglect, you'll develop one of three insecure styles that we call anxious or the avoidant one, or a combination of the two that we call fearful avoidant. Mm-hmm. As kids, we use the term disorganized. So some people may be familiar with the term disorganized attachment. Mm-hmm. And in those people, they desire closeness and intimacy and connection, but they fear it at the same time. And that happens a lot in these abusive situations. Mm-hmm. And if the care was inconsistent, so you may not have been abused, but the care could have been very inconsistent, we sometimes will develop an anxious attachment. So we're constantly seeking reassurance. We constantly want to know, is that caregiver there and available? And so then we do that later on with a romantic partner. And so people can get caught also in which tends to happen quite a bit. I see this a lot in the couples I work with, where someone who is anxious links up with someone who's avoidant, and then they create just a vicious cycle type dynamic, because the more the anxious person seeks closeness, mm-hmm. the more the avoidant backs off and pulls away and, sees it as dangerous or, oh, you're needy. And so then the more that person backs away, the anxious partner tries harder, and it just creates this vicious cycle. But it's also important to say that these attachment styles exist on a continuum and that they can be changeable, uh-huh. which is really good news. And I want to make sure people understand I'm not saying that it's pathological in any way whatsoever to have an attachment style, because okay. we all have them.
Okay.
And they all vary depending on those early established patterns. And so if we can reflect on our childhood experiences, sometimes we can recognize, this is why I act the way I do today. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And hopefully, the more you're secure and the more you choose a secure partner, then the better off you'll be. So that's definitely a goal for people. And then if you have somebody willing, because, I would say if you are, let's say, more anxious and you are seeking and you have a partner or someone you're with who's more avoidant,
mm-hmm.
and you say to them, hey, I think this is what's going on and I really want to work on this. I want to find a way so that we're both happier with each other and that we're not constantly fighting over you know, the need for closeness or connection, or whatever, however it sort of manifests itself in that relationship, is that if you have somebody willing, then that's really good news. So it doesn't mean you just have to say, all right, I'm like this and you're like that and forget it, it's over. But see their willingness to change and work on it. If you have somebody who says no, or they don't want to, or they're unwilling to, you know, do this self-reflection, then that's also a sign you're not going to have, I would say, a partner who you can really count on long term. This is always going to be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why are there so many men today that are so emotionally unavailable?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is definitely cultural and societal. I think we do men, you know, a disservice in our society with the way that we socialize them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that men are born with the same ability, you know, to know their emotional world, express themselves emotionally, but I think we tend to want them to turn that down, that it's not masculine for them to be expressive in that way. And I think now we even are starting to recognize, you know, the term toxic masculinity is out there. Mm-hmm. So I think we're starting to recognize that we're not really helping men by having them be stoic and keep their emotions to themselves and not have emotions, or not see that dependency can be really a great thing, that it's okay to be dependent on somebody and have someone dependent on you, that there's that mutual dependency back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that's changing because of the new information and research that is coming out about this, and we also know that the men who do this better, who have more of an emotional fluency, so they can talk and speak about their emotions, they know and understand their emotions better, those are the ones that have the most successful relationships as well. So I think we have a lot that tells us that we really need to continue to shift in a different direction about the way that we're raising men.
Okay. Very good point. What is the difference between being addicted to someone of the opposite sex and thinking or saying that you love that person and you can't let them go, even though they treat you horribly?
probably a tough thing to sort of to siphon out. It's hard to let someone go if you feel like you're in love with them, but they're unhealthy for you. I think it is really, really tough. I mean, it's probably one of the worst feelings in the world to have to say goodbye to someone or leave somebody that you love and care about, but you know isn't right for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, you know, if you're able to look at that person and you know, say that, you know, this relationship doesn't have mutuality, it's not back and forth, or this person is draining me, or they're draining me emotionally, or maybe I am with them because I feel like I can help, and certainly you're trying to control that person too. If you're constantly doing, you know, all of the work to sustain the relationship, that all those things are problematic. So if you want to call it addicted or just say, hey, I have a problem and it's not healthy, to me it doesn't matter even so much what somebody's calling it. It's just, to me, it's more about recognizing that it's unhealthy and you've got to make a change and you have to do something about it, and you have to recognize what you can and can't control. And that if you're not being fulfilled, you know, in any way, or there's just a lot of chaos around that relationship, that it's really time, you know, to move on. And there may be some type of an addictive process involved in it as well. And those relationships, I would say, are also marked more by a lot of intensity too when you're with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me would be a a big red flag about addiction is that you're with them and it almost feels like a high. And then when you're not with them, you are craving and craving and craving being with them, and maybe it occupies too much of your thoughts, attention, it's hard to concentrate. So then we might be moving more into addiction level with somebody. But most importantly, if it's recognize how if it's healthy, not healthy, and then come up with a plan of action to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. But how can you recognize if it's not healthy if you're not able to take a look at the whole situation objectively? I mean, you know, you may think it's not healthy,
right?
But then he comes back and he says, "Hey, this is, you know, this is the deal."
Well, then it's great to get, I would say, an outside opinion. And I know people tend to push away friends and family who maybe are critical of your relationship. Mm-hmm. But I would say if you can, slow down a bit around that and really think about the people that are in your life that have loved you and cared about you for a long time. So this could be your close friends, your family, or just, it could even be, sometimes it's people that we're just acquaintances with, but they make comments. And so those people tend to know. And if you're hearing a lot of negativity from them or a lot of concern that they're expressing that for you and for this relationship, I would say that is going to be some of the best information that you could get as to whether or not the relationship's healthy or not. And if you think that they're really, you know, of course they're not objective because they care about you, but if you really need to seal the deal, you can always seek help from a professional. You can always go see a therapist either on your own, or you bring the person in there, and hopefully you can get some information that way that will tell you that it's unhealthy. And it could be something within you, could be something with him, or it could be just your interaction together. Sometimes people just, they bring out the worst in us. And so it could be two good people that just are not compatible, and it just causes like a combustion when they, you know, when they're together. And it doesn't necessarily mean that either of them have, you know, like a personality disorder or something, but it could just mean that they just truly are not meant to be together because they don't get along.
Okay.
So all of those things I would say are important in getting maybe an outside perspective on your relationship.
Okay, and hopefully you're willing to listen. What
yes.
is limerence in a relationship, and how does it go wrong? So wrong.
Yes, I love this word limerence. And when I first heard it, and there's some other research on it besides from this person, Dr. John Gottman, who is a prolific marriage and relationship researcher, and he's put a lot of work out there. And he talks about different stages that love goes through. And the early stages he terms limerence. And it's another word for lust or infatuation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often what happens in those early stages of the relationship. And it feels amazing. So we all, you know, we can think back, those of us who have been in long-term relationships, and we all can think back, let's say, on that time when we first met our partners and, you know, the feelings we had. It's like, it is like being high. And there's been some studies out there where they've put people in MRI machines and they've studied their brain. They've had, like, they've flashed a picture of the person that they're in those early stages of love with, mm-hmm. and the brain lights up like they're on cocaine. And so there's studies that show that this is what's happening to us. And but the issue where it can go wrong is that we might call it love, and it may not be love yet. And sometimes the feelings, when they're reciprocated, great. But there's also sometimes where it's not reciprocated and we're so focused and we have so much tunnel vision on this person that we don't really even know real well yet. Maybe there's a strong physical attraction, But we might say we're in love with them, or it was love at first sight. And I say, you don't know if it's love yet. And so if we, you know, maybe are better about calling it what it is and recognizing that the logical, rational part of our brain goes offline during this time as well. So we're not always making the best judgment calls with people. And it's fantastic if it does work out, then great. I think that's wonderful. But if it starts to go, you know, downhill, I want people not to become, let's say, obsessive or overly focused or fantasizing, wishing, hoping, okay, this is going to work out. I want them to realize and recognize that it's not going to pan out that way, and that they're probably wasting their time and they need to move on to somebody else. And so that's when it really goes wrong, is when it starts to get obsessive like that.
Okay. Well, you have a very interesting outlook on soulmates. Share that with us. Which I agree with.
What was that?
I said I agree with it, by the way.
You agree? Oh, good. Soulmate is it's such a lovely word. And I think that we can definitely be soulfully connected, and maybe there are, you know, past lives and ways that our spirits and have crossed in our past. You know, I do believe in that. But where I think it could be problematic is if we think this person's our soulmate, we're going to filter out the things that tell us they're not our soulmate. So that's one concern. And then also they might think, well, I don't have to work on it. I don't have to work on things or try to repair, because they're supposed to be my soulmate. They're supposed to just know what I want, or know, like, it was just supposed to work out. We're supposed to march off into the sunset, even though we're having these problems here. So I think I worry about that term, just depending on how it's used and if it blocks someone from being solid on the ground and in reality, and not just using that maybe as some excuse to keep, you know, they keep perpetuating some bad behavior, or the partner, or accepting bad behavior from a partner because they think it's a soulmate situation. Yeah.
And, you know, folks, soulmate, you know, when we come into Earth, you know, and again, this is BS belief system. When you come into Earth, you come in certain soul groups. So groups are large, okay? So within groups, there are many people. So there's more than one opportunity to have a soulmate. Just because one person you made that connection with, they may or may not be. You can have many soulmates because we're part of soul groups. So please don't get tunnel visioned into, oh my God, he has to be the one because so-and-so told me he was my soulmate. You know, no, BS, and that is bullshit on that one.
Okay. That's a great definition. I like that, soul groups. I'm going to have to remember that one.
Okay, well, please do. Now, why is it that so many women truly decide to stay in a relationship with a married guy? They know they get mad when he can't come for the holidays. They get mad if they want to see him for dinner on Thursday and he can't make it. They, you know, they go off the deep end and they blame the wife. They blame her. They say it's her fault. She's in the way of my happiness. Why do women stay in that crap?
Well, part of it is, I think I'd mentioned it before, is that sometimes they don't know right away that they're married, and then emotionally it becomes really tough to leave because they now do have strong feelings for this person, or they believe that they're in love. And then I think another reason, though, again, has to do with that early family history. We call it family of origin, the family that you grew up in. And the attachment history, a lot of times that's what's playing out. And so, you know, going back to really, you know, do some self-reflection on your history. And sometimes that means even going to see a therapist to kind of work through, because that's mm-hmm. what they do really, really well. They're able to understand how things have played out in your early, what we call the family system, and how these parts may have impacted and influenced you, and then how they're influencing your future choices, and certainly choices in a romantic partner. Mm-hmm. But also, again, I think the excuses that the men give and the stories that they tell the woman, you know, make them maybe feel bad for them, and they really care about this person. They might feel pity on them, just depending on what they're being told. Mm-hmm. And sometimes women, I think, like I've seen some really, really tough situations where somebody was manipulated or gaslighted. And so things get really turned and twisted around. And so this person this woman is becoming a victim of emotional abuse from this person too. Mm-hmm. So I've seen all kinds of situations that keep the woman stuck or thinking that they should stay and wait it out.
Yeah, you know, ladies and gentlemen, too, you know, tomorrow's promised to nobody. Live life fully today, and if it's not working, get the heck out. Okay, so Dr. Marnie, let's talk about some dating do's and dating don'ts. Can you share a couple of tips on do's and a couple of tips on don'ts?
Sure. We'll definitely have the right approach and the right attitude and mindset, like I had mentioned before. You know, keep your expectations very reasonable. And I would also say, particularly for women, because I think men do this pretty well, but I think women need to not just, like if they meet somebody and they like them, to not immediately eliminate all other people. You know, like I still think they need to keep the door open until somebody asks for, you know, to be boyfriend, girlfriend, or wants to be more serious, and you have that discussion. I think that's super important. And then I'd say watch their behavior. Are they asking a lot of questions and asking interested in you? Are they also answering your questions? Do they deflect your questions? I would say it's you know, not the best sign if you say, hey, where did you grow up and where did you go to school? What are your, you know, where does your family live? Whatever questions you normally ask during a date, if the person seems very closed off, or even if they seem kind of turned off by your questions, or if they dominate the discussion, they never ask anything about you. Certainly if they get drunk on the date, mm-hmm. Definitely a no-no. See how they treat people, like the wait staff. How do they act? I think that's also a very good indicator. Listen for consistency in their stories. If things sound vague, that's not good. You know, if let's say you ask where they work and they say, oh, well, I'm kind of in between jobs now, and you hear this whole sort of song and dance, but you're not really getting a good idea of, you know, what is this person's job history or educational history, or they seem so vague, they're not really answering questions directly, mm-hmm. or they have poor eye contact. If they say every single one of my exes is crazy, is also a red flag too, I would be careful of. Mm-hmm. So I'd say just have your antennas up, and try to be really discerning and not get swept away in, you know, just the attraction, especially if you think the person is really, really good looking and you're really attracted to them. All right, that's a great start. But it shouldn't stop there. You still have a lot of information to get that will tell you if this person's even worthy of the second date.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say those are a few things. Hopefully that'll help people.
Okay. And what about the S word, sex? I mean, when should you? Should you hold out? Should you give it up? You know.
I think for and this is more specific to women. Okay, men I think will tend to try. You know, mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean you have to. I think waiting longer is always better, because men look at sex very differently. And I think women become attached a lot quicker, or because and that's just even the chemicals and the hormones that surge when we are physically intimate with somebody. Mm-hmm. So you might be, like, as a woman, you might be thinking, okay, if I have sex with this person, then they'll only want to see me. They'll be more serious about me, or they'll commit, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or if you're trying to get closeness with the person more, and you're trying sex to do that, it's not going to work. All those things do not work well. So I think women sometimes will have sex, but they're really wanting more of a deeper connection or a deeper intimacy, mm-hmm. but the person maybe isn't giving them that. Maybe they're not capable of that. Maybe they really are an emotionally unavailable man, and they're not giving enough time to see how things play out, and so they're having sex, I think, instead, and then they're hurt even more if it doesn't pan out, or if the person does end up ghosting them. I mean, it's a lot worse to be ghosted after you're physically intimate with somebody. So I would say you're going to want something a little more solid with this person. Uh-huh. And I think you're going to want to have a conversation about where the relationship is going to make sure you're both on the same page about it. And again, if you both are like, oh, this is never going to work out, but we're both so sexually attracted to each other, let's jump in bed. Okay, just if you both agree to that. But if you want a relationship and he just wants, you know, no, I'm not looking for anything right now, but of course I'll sleep with you. You need to decide if that's going to be okay with you, or if you're really going to be hurt if this guy moves on to someone else in a week or two.
Okay, so if you
so that's what I would say about this.
Okay, so you decide to sleep with him, and he's still going home to his wife every night. He says he's not doing anything with her because he's not interested, which, you know, I feel is iffy, but anyway, you never know. you want him. Yeah, I mean, say you're highly sexed, and you just want him all the freaking time, and you're calling him, telling him to come over and skip work, lunch, skip, you know, whatever, and come over. And when he doesn't do that, you become enraged. Do you have a bit of a problem?
Oh, I would absolutely say that that would be a problem, yes. Then I think we're getting into the more of the addictive piece of things.
Uh-huh.
I would say if you're that obsessive and if you're feeling like you have to use that even to lure him, and if that's the only thing that's luring him, you've got a big problem there. Okay. And so when they say, oh, I'm not having sex with the wife, and I mean, that's not always true. So you definitely cannot always believe that they're not having sex with their spouse just mm-hmm. because they're having sex with you. So I think that's a big misconception that people have. Mm-hmm. All of these things are definitely things that you're going to want to be super careful of and start to recognize that this probably isn't the best or the healthiest for you for your long-term for a long-term decision here mm-hmm. that you're just going to keep doing this over and over and over again while time goes by and your life passes you by. So sure, I think exactly what you said would be definitely problematic.
Okay. So when we go to the website, thetalkingsolution.com or drmarnieonline.com, what are we going to find there?
Well, it's like thetalkingsolution.com is my practice website, so that's a lot of information about my therapy practice in South Florida, mm-hmm. And there's definitely information on there that's geared more towards couples and those in relationships, and then my Dr. Marnie Online site is also my official author website, and if you are wanting to subscribe to my newsletter, right now on there, on that website, I have a free webinar that you will instantly get in your email that discusses some reasons why you might be having unhealthy relationship patterns. Mm-hmm. And so that's a free one-hour webinar, and that's drmarnionline.com. And there's also a blog on there with more content similar to what we're discussing today.
Okay, and folks, of course, the book, Ghosted and Breadcrumbs, Stop Falling for Unavailable Men, and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships is available everywhere. Dr. Marnie, I really loved your time today and the information that you shared. What pearls of wisdom do you want to leave for women today?
I would say the biggest pearl of wisdom is that you can make changes and you can empower yourself to make better decisions, and that you deserve love. You deserve someone who is physically and emotionally present and will show up for you. So that's the biggest thing that I want women to think about, and they should never settle for less than that.
Girl, amen to that. Okay, folks, we've been speaking with Dr. Marnie Poirier, and she, again, is the author of Ghosted and Breadcrumbs, Stop Falling for Unavailable Men, and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships. If you are in an unhealthy relationship based on the information that you heard today, please go get the book and read it. If you've got a girlfriend, boyfriend, friend, parent who's in a relationship that we've discussed today, get the book, read it, and then share it with them, okay? Because it's a wonderful form of self-help, and if you need that next step, do contact Dr. Marnie, and if she's not, you know, able or available to work with you at that particular time, she can connect you with somebody who can. So, Dr. Marnie, thank you. Thank you, for your time today. I appreciate your time and information.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And to the audience, thank you for being with me tonight as we collectively get over it and stop being ghosted and breadcrumbed. The divine in me truly honors the divine in you. I really appreciate everybody's time and attention. And when you're ready to raise your vibration and shift your energy, give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of self-love. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.